originally anticipated because his daughter worked for Disney. The New York Stock Exchange never implemented such a rule. But because he was beholden to another board member, Roy, who effectively employed him as chief executive of Shamrock. At the same time, John Bryson was proposed as independent, despite his wife's $1.35 million position at the Disney co-owned Lifetime, which meant Bryson could serve on the committee. "You must be kidding," Van de Kamp blurted out. "This makes no sense." She argued that Bryson and Gold were either both independent or neither was. "The shareholders won't accept this," she maintained. Nonetheless, the measure to designate Gold as non-independent and Bryson as independent was put to a vote and easily passed, with only Van de Kamp, Gold, and Roy voting against it. Robert Stern, Eisner's architect, was also deemed non-independent. 10 minutes later, a typed list of committee assignments was circulated. Bryson was now chairman of the governance committee, and Van de Kamp was dropped. Eisner didn't stop there. That same month, he called on Ravetta Bowers at her office at the Center for Early Education to explain that it would be improper for any Disney employee to contribute to the center if she remained on the board. Two of Disney's top executives, Bob Iger and Tom Staggs, had children at the school and were important potential donors. But if Bowers stayed on Disney's board, their contributions would be limited to a modest amount. "Now you're hitting me in my bread box," Bowers said, stressing her previous decision to step down from the board. When Bowers reported the conversation to others, including Van de Kamp, she was uncharacteristically angry. At Christmas, Van de Kamp noticed that she didn't receive the usual Eisner holiday gift, a wheel of Vermont cheddar cheese or apples. She wondered if this was an oversight and called to ask Patty Disney if she and Roy had received anything. "Yeah, the aged cheddar," Patty replied. "Do you want one? I have several years' worth in the refrigerator." Van de Kamp demurred, but sent Eisner and Jane a thank-you note anyway, as she did every year, just in case the gift had gone astray. She heard nothing in reply. After the new year, Eisner phoned and asked Van de Kamp if she could meet with him in his office on January 20, 2003, which happened to be the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. After the absence of a Christmas gift, and after hearing about his meeting with Ravetta Bowers, she was somewhat apprehensive. Still, she was hardly prepared for the outburst from Eisner that ensued. "You're a terrible director," he said. "You come late to meetings, you're not prepared, you're too busy." Van de Kamp was shocked. She'd been a conscientious director, and not once in 4 years had Eisner or anybody else complained. "You are so loyal to Stanley, it's like you've carried his babies," Eisner said. Van de Kamp's mind reeled. What was Eisner suggesting? That she had occasionally voted with Gold because she was having an affair with him? Van de Kamp reached over and put her hand on Eisner's arm, looking directly at him. "Michael, stop this right now. The best thing I have in my life is my marriage." She paused, but he said nothing further, so she continued. "What you're really upset about is that I don't always vote with you. That's the real issue." "It's not that you haven't always voted with me," he said,